You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Good guest today. Great Mike Tenenbaum will join us right at 10, and our co-host, CC Sabathia, will, he's taken quite a bit of time off in co-hosting the show, but he will be with us at 10:30 this morning.
He's like Jay Williams. He just takes days off whenever he wants.
But he's back middle of the fall book. This morning.
Middle of the fall book, as opposed to us, where you have the power goes out, you got no lights, you got no internet, and those count as actual days off, and then when you have a baby... That you don't take, you know, God forbid you take a couple of days off after the baby.
You didn't take all your paternity leave, did you?
I took zero.
He didn't take
zero
paternity leave.
You're unbelievable. Wait, you had a baby. What was the baby born on, a Friday?
Baby was born on the 20th of Friday?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was a Friday.
So it was back Monday.
So yeah. You took the Friday for the birthday.
Well, yeah, because I had to.
Right.
Yeah, I
mean, of course you did.
Born.
You're unbelievable. You're like a superhero.
Well, no, because you get chastised. I try to take one day off. What? Before the fall book started, I try to take one of my days off. They're like, oh, you know, you got to count those days where you had no internet or lights as days off. I was like, what?
Oh, my goodness. There's a pandemic going on.
I was in a parking lot so I could actually call into the show.
You would think Tom Coughlin's running the station. Yeah. Tom Coughlin doesn't care about your power being out, doesn't care about a hurricane.
Nope.
You better be at work, and it better be 5 minutes early or you're late.
He'd care about kickers missing, kicks to win games last night.
I keep telling you guys, man, kickers aren't football players. I keep trying to tell you guys, nobody wants to listen. How frustrating would it be? You're Mike Williams. You set that opportunity up. Big time catch, big boy catch. It was a 50-50 ball, but he's going to bring those down 100% of the time. In between coverage, two guys on him, set the opportunity up, and then the kicker's going to miss the field goal?
Indoors. Mind you.
When he's nailing them from 58 in pregame warmups, and they're showing that before he's got the 50-yard attempt, that's got to be frustrating, man. That's maddening. And then for Justin Herbert, I mean, the kid had an awesome night. Becomes the first rookie quarterback to throw four touchdowns on Monday Night Football, and then on 3rd and 7 in overtime, KJ Hill. Like, I know the ball's a little bit behind you, but if you get two hands on it, you got to come down with that play for your quarterback, for your team.
They're 1-4. They could be 4-1 right now.
Yeah, exactly, Dave. That's what I'm saying. To me, last night, the Saints were fortunate to be in that game late. Like, they were fortunate for as bad as they played in the first half of that game. Like, the Chargers are a relatively young football team. They made some mistakes in the second half that left the door open for the Saints to come back. But that should not have been a Saints overtime win. To me, that was all about the Chargers losing that football game, much more than it was about the Saints winning it.
And we've talked about it a bunch on the show, Rick. Drew Brees, he's just he can't throw the ball downfield. Unless a guy is just wide open like Jared Cook was on that play, he can't throw the ball downfield.
Yeah, he struggles. I mean, his first half was brutal.
Brutal.
I mean, they made adjustments. I mean, give Sean Payton credit. They made adjustments. They got no Michael Thomas, which I think is huge for them. But, I mean, I think we've seen enough to realize that's going to be the case, that they can't push the ball down the field. I mean, I thought their defense would be better, to be completely honest with you. I'm not overly impressed with their defense. But, I mean, this is it. I mean, you know, you heard Sean Payton before the season. It was accidental. He let it slip. I mean, he said this is Drew Brees' last year. This is it.
I thought it was interesting for the most consequential play that they had all the way up until this point this season. They took Drew Brees off the field, and they gave it to Taysom Hill.
Yeah, they do it a ton.
No, I'm just saying that tells you how the organization feels about Drew Brees and how they feel about Taysom Hill and everybody else that they have on that team. That just lets you know, like, yeah, we trust Drew Brees to a point, but when it comes to these critical plays, and especially when you look at where the NFL is going, we'd rather have a quarterback that has, you know, the skill set to be able to move around a little bit more, plus somebody that's got a live arm. And that's clear that Drew Brees doesn't have that anymore. Like, to me, one of the best throws he made last night was the wheel route that he threw to Alvin Kamara on that game-time mm-hmm. drive. Like, that was probably the best throw that he made all night. And that really wasn't really about the throw. It was about the catch.
Yeah, it was a great catch.
He's so, I mean, I just – I don't know, man. I said it before the season. I thought Drew Brees was washed up last year, and I haven't seen anything that would make me think otherwise through five games. Now, they sit on top of the division, so they're still in a good spot, but I don't know, man. This Saints team is just – I don't think it's the team that everybody thought was going to show up in 2020.
No, I agree with you. So, who it looks like Green Bay and Seattle are the best two teams in the NFC now, huh?
Yeah, I would say I would put the Packers probably as far as your most complete. I don't like Seattle's defense at all.
Well, it's bad.
I mean, that's Russell Wilson making magic happen. I mean, they shouldn't have won the game against Minnesota.
But I think Seattle's defense will be a lot better at the end of the season than they are right now.
Because that's my biggest concern about KJ
Wright and Bobby Wagner, they are really young on defense. Really young. And they don't have any Jamal Adams right now.
Right.
So
that's my biggest concern about New Orleans, though. Is that we've seen this. Over the last couple of years, Drew Brees, I mean, he benefited from, you know, last year missing some time, and then it didn't really affect him as much later in the season, but he wears down. I mean, over the last couple of years, he's worn down. So from the start of the season this way, I would be a little bit concerned that as the season progresses, he's going to continue to wear down. If he can't get the ball down the field now, what's it going to look like come later on in the season?
So let me ask you this question. Do you think it might be a situation where Sean Payton would consider benching Drew Brees for Taysom Hill?
No.
See, I don't know.
I mean, because you have a playoff contending team. I look at the Saints, and I know that the back end of their defense is shaky, but their front seven is still pretty good. They can get after the quarterback, and you got to like their offensive line, and you like the weapons that they have with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara, the skill position players. So, I mean, I feel like you have a team that's capable of winning a playoff game if you have a capable quarterback. And what we're saying is Drew Brees is not a capable quarterback because he can't threaten every level of the defense. Drew Brees can't push the ball 30 yards downfield. That's not happening anymore.
No, unless the guy is just running wide open. He can't,
he's got to be able to run into that throw.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No. And the answer for me would be no. I don't think they make that move. I think that Drew Brees, you live or die with Drew Brees. I would think so.
So you let Drew Brees hold your franchise hostage for this season, knowing that you have a team that's probably capable of winning a playoff game?
I think they will.
Wow.
Whether it's the right move or not. I would be absolutely stunned if Drew Brees is not the starting quarterback unless he's injured for the rest of the season. Yes.
I'm just asking you a question, Dave. Now, listen, I understand that there's, you know, some dynamics here that are at play. Drew Brees and what he means to the city of New Orleans, what he means to that franchise and everything that happened after Katrina. Like, I understand that makes it difficult to bench a player like Drew Brees. But I'm just talking about what's in the best interest of the 2020 Saints. What's in the best interest of this football team? You feel like that's Drew Brees over any other option that they have on that team?
I got to be honest with you. I might.
Okay.
I might. Because Taysom Hill is nice in small doses. But if you're going to tell me that Taysom Hill is my starting quarterback for full games, I don't know. I don't know that I love that, to be honest with you. I don't think they have a great option. Taysom Hill feels like an eight snap a game guy at quarterback, not every down guy.
Well, if you could trust Jameis Winston not to turn the football over, I mean, he would be your better option.
Yes.
I don't know, as much as Sean Payton says, you know, Taysom Hill is going to end up being their quarterback, the fact that they flirted with Tom Brady joining the team if Drew Brees retired,
right,
would lead me to believe that, I mean, he can say what he wants, but I don't know how sold he is on Taysom Hill as the full-time starting quarterback.
Well, I can't be sold at all. Why would you make overtures to anybody if you think you have your future quarterback on the roster?
I don't think you would, and I think that Taysom Hill's really good at what he does. And if you use him, I mean, then you can't – I mean, he's your quarterback then. You can't use him in all the fun ways that Sean Payton likes to use him. You can't use him now.
No. No.
Interesting. I never thought I'd hear you say that, Ricky, because I know you loved you some Taysom Hill.
No, I love Taysom Hill, but I think he's really good at what he does. If all of a sudden now you make him your starting quarterback, I don't know. Like, I know what Sean Payton says, and I understand why he says it, especially with the way the NFL is going and you see some of these mobile quarterbacks. But what confused me is that if this is your guy, you paid him to take over when Drew Brees is done, why would you even flirt with Tom Brady? Like, why would New Orleans even be an option for Tom Brady if Drew Brees was going to retire?
You're preaching to the choir when it comes to Taysom Hill, brother. I was the one that said that a couple of years ago. Like, Taysom Hill is a nice player when you have a package for him. I don't think Taysom Hill is your every game starting quarterback. I just don't see that. That's why I thought Teddy Bridgewater was a nice succession plan that they had up until the point when Teddy Bridgewater became a free agent, played those five games last year, commanding $66 million in a contract on the open market. So I still think they're trying to find who that next guy is. And it's to me, if that was Taysom Hill, then you wouldn't be as aggressive as you are in bringing in quarterbacks that were former first-round picks from other teams. So I'm with you guys. But I'm just saying, in terms of where Drew Brees is at right now, I don't know, man. I just feel like this is an offense that's easy to game plan for because they can't push the ball downfield.
And that being said, they still put up 30 points last night, right?
Yeah, I'm going to hold off judgment until I see what this offense looks like with Michael Thomas back. Because even last year, they knew. I mean, you knew exactly where the ball was going. And still, Michael Thomas had the greatest receiving season we've seen, receptions-wise. But I don't disagree with you. I think and it only will probably get worse as the season progresses, as he starts to wear down. Which concerns me. But I mean, you got one of the best play callers in the National Football League, so maybe he feels like he can scheme around the deficiencies.
And you got to remember as well. And I'm not saying this is my take, but I think this is a big take. He's a living legend there in New Orleans. Like, to take him and bench him in his final season, that'd be a huge story.
Yeah, be a huge story, but you're not worried about, I mean, how the fans are reacting. There's no one in the building.
Another great point.
So, I mean, that's it. You're going to do what's in the best interest of your team, and I don't think Drew Brees did himself any favors this offseason with saying what he said.
Ooh. I was going to stay away from that one.
Well, no, you got to take that into account. I mean, that's the whole point of being the leader of the team, being that guy, is you got to lead, you know, 52 other guys. And when you say something like he said, I mean, that chips away at it a little bit. Guys look at you different.
No question about it. Guys feel like their leader doesn't see who they really are. That's what it is. Like, players want to be seen. Like, you want to be acknowledged for all the things that you do to support your teammates, especially your quarterback. And when you come out and you make a statement like that, not realizing that it comes off as callous to the plight of a lot of the guys that share that locker room with you, that's going to be one of those things that's frustrating, Rick. But I say, when you start bringing up that, and you factor that into the equation, I only thought that would be a concern if things go left, especially early on. Like, if things are bad, then I think that starts to become a louder conversation. But right now they're on the top of the division, so I think they're still okay. But if Drew Brees struggle or he regresses from what we've seen through the first quarter of the season, then I would think that would start to become more of a problem.
Yeah, let's not bury the lead of what we saw last night, too. I mean, you bring up the third down throw Justin Herbert made. It wasn't a great throw. The fourth down throw wasn't a great throw either.
Yeah, but he's got to catch it. Listen, KJ Hill's got to catch it.
No, the third one down. I mean, the third down, you're right. You're correct. I mean, he catches that, it's a completely different ball game. But now you have a chance. You throw to Mike Williams on fourth down. If that ball's where it needs to be, Mike Williams picks up the first down. That's high behind him, slows down his momentum, and Lattimore makes a nice tackle. But my point is this, forget the throw, is that you watched that game last night, right? And you realize how good Justin Herbert could be, but what a great situation. Like, with the amount of talent around him, is night and day to what Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones.
Yeah, they've set him up to succeed. And his best receiver leaves the game early on, and he still goes out there and throws for four touchdowns.
Well, yeah, but luckily,
leaves him in the position to win that game.
Yeah, but luckily for you, when your best receiver, one of the best receivers, he's one of the most underrated wide receivers in
could not agree
football,
more.
Keenan
could
Allen.
Not agree more.
Okay, you lose him. Just so happens, okay.
You got another first-round pick out receiver,
exactly right.
Mike Williams.
Who would be the best wide receiver on the Jets or the Giants?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't even be a question.
Yeah. Mike Williams is in the conversation for best number two receivers in the National Football League.
I'm telling you right
now.
Good
he is.
I am telling you right now, if I had a play where I had to get the ball down the field, Mike Williams may be the guy I pick to go up and get it.
Oh, yeah.
He makes catches like that every single week, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Beast.
Yeah. We've seen him like since he's been doing it in high school.
Bills Titans, school, by South the Carolina. Way, will be played tonight. Bills Titans will be played tonight. No new positive test for the Titans. The game will be played 7 o'clock tonight. So Tuesday night football, which is good. Should be a good game, too.
Well, who knows? I mean, Tennessee's practiced, what, twice? Two practices, three practices in the last 2 weeks?
Yep.
I'm telling you right now, if the NFL all of a sudden, they keep dealing with this, and they go to winning percentage at the end of the year to make the playoffs, I'm one of these teams that's getting forced into playing these games. I would be in lose. I would be pissed.
Like the Patriots last Monday?
Yeah, like the Patriots, like the Titans now. I mean, you're not going up against a slouch either. You're going up against, I mean,
slouch. The Bills
another
favorite
undefeated team.
Yeah. Could be the. I mean, listen, this could be the best team right now that there is. I mean, Buffalo is playing brilliant football at the moment.
Yeah, Buffalo's playing great football right now. I mean, you loaded AFC. I'm going to save it for CMT. But I mean,
you don't think Buffalo is the best team in the NFL, though?
No,
you don't.
I don't, but I think they might be playing the best football right now.
Yeah, they're playing. They're playing well. Josh Allen is playing out of his mind. Their defense still isn't what we thought it was going to be coming into this year, but they're fine. They had some injuries early on. Milano and I forget the other kid. He was banged up a little bit. Edmonds was banged up a little bit, but they'll be all right. Buffalo's going to be there. Buffalo is going to be one of the teams that you got to contend with in the playoffs. AFC. Yeah.
I mean, that's clearly a playoff team.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, they're a team right now. I mean, as far as from top to bottom, starting with the head coach, that, I mean, I don't think that they're nearly as explosive as, like, still give me Kansas City still. I don't care what you saw against Vegas. Give me Kansas City still. But, I mean, you put them right up there. I mean, there's no reason why this team can't make serious noise in the playoffs.
Absolutely. 100%. Look, we're going to know a lot more about them in the next 6 days also. They're what, Tennessee tonight, Kansas City next Monday? We'll have a real answer on Buffalo next week.
But I think a lot of their successes, and remember the conversations last year too with them in the playoffs, is that, I mean, Josh Allen has taken that next step, and I think it helps you.
Yes.
You surround him with a guy like Steph Diggs, like what he does for your offense. But, I mean, there were, like, he does have, I mean, you saw it against the Jets too. Like, he can go rogue once in a while.
And make
big mistakes.
He did it in the playoff game last year where he made bizarre decisions.
He did it with the Jets, against the Jets, too. I mean, trying to jump over people and fumbling the ball and everything else.
Yep, turn the ball
over. But I think that's why you got to have a really good play caller that's in tune with what kind of player he's got at the quarterback position so you can try to mitigate as many of those plays as you possibly can. Opportunities when your quarterback's going to put the ball on the ground, stuff like that, knowing when to have design runs for him, knowing when to rein him in, knowing when to get him a completion to get him back on track. Like, all of that stuff comes down to having a play caller and a head coach that understands exactly what his quarterback needs in order to make sure you get him back on track when he is starting to go rogue a little bit.
What's a head coach?
That stuff matters, man.
I'd love to know what a head coach is. I just am I'm struggling to find where ours is.
Yeah, but doesn't it frustrate from the Giants and the Jets standpoint that all these teams have young quarterbacks? Kyler Murray, they go out, they get DeAndre Hopkins. The Buffalo Bills, they go out, they get Stephon Diggs. And the Jets do make it worse by losing their best receiver and bringing in Breshad Perriman. And the Giants
know. But see, here's the thing, though. Like, I mean, I don't know if – no, I know. I'll just say it. I don't think Robbie Anderson is having nearly as much success on this Jets team as he is right now in Carolina. I mean, that's all
agreed.
System and play calling. I mean, that's what
fine,
that is.
But he's still better than Braxton Berrios and Chris Hogan.
I understand that, but that's part of the reason why he didn't want to stay. Because he didn't feel like the Jets were using him the right way. The same way Lev Bell doesn't, and he's a pain in the ass, I get it, but he doesn't feel like the Jets are using him the right way.
Yeah, Lev Bell ain't telling no lies, though.
He's not.
He ain't telling no lies. Yeah.
And all of a sudden,
for him to only be targeted once in the passing game against Arizona is absolutely ridiculous. Who deserves to touch the ball more than Lev Bell on the offensive side? Who?
Nobody. The quarterback, that's it.
You got to trade him.
If you can trade him, I'm sure they'd like to trade him.
Can you trade him? With that contract, can you trade him?
That's the question.
I don't think you're going to find any takers with that contract.
You'll have to eat some of it.
It's going to depend on what happens with the coach. I mean, I would imagine if Adam Gase gets fired here at some point, that whoever ends up taking over is going to realize that Lev Bell is their best opportunity to win football games. He's one of the best. Dude, he is, before he took the year off, dual threat running backs that can run the ball and catch passes out of the backfield like a wide receiver. He was the guy.
Oh, yeah. He was in the conversation with Saquon Barkley and Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara, all those dudes. That was Le'Veon Bell. Before all those dudes came on the scene, it was Le'Veon Bell. Nobody had more yards from scrimmage over the first 4 years, averaged more yards from scrimmage in the first 4 years of their career than Le'Veon Bell. Nobody. And then all of a sudden he comes to the Jets, he forgets how to play football. Or so it seems.
It's amazing, man. It really is. It's unbelievable.
Because they use him so terribly. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, but see, that's one of my biggest issues, though. Like, you've already seen what Lev Bell is capable of doing. So, I mean, it's more blatant than when you see, like, young guys that are drafted that don't develop, that end up being considered
busts. Right, because you don't know. You've seen him. He was, the top 3-4 running back in all of football.
Which now kind of, I mean, it becomes so glaring because we're talking about, picks that Maccagnan made, picks that Joe Douglas is making. Like, what? Once you pick them, you need to develop them. You don't just pick a guy in the second, third, fourth round and just plop him in a system and expect them just to be great. That doesn't happen. You got to help these guys get better. And it doesn't feel like what's going on, man. It doesn't. You can't just get
the opposite.
It can't be,
no?
Yeah, but it can't be you just keep making bad picks. That's impossible. Yeah, every pick you make can't be a bad pick. There's more that goes into that. And now I got now Adam Gase is considering not calling plays. If he's not calling plays, what is he here for then? What do we have him for?
Set the tone.
For what?
I'm kidding. I don't know. I don't know why he's here at all right now.
This whole thing is a mess, and I'm telling you right now, it just feels like the further this goes along, the one who's going to pay the price for this is Sam Darnold. This actually feels like a ploy from Adam Gase. Just to prove to people that it's not my system, it's because the talent stinks, I'll have someone else call the plays, and you can see how bad it is with them calling plays. Because otherwise, I don't understand why this would be something he's thinking about.
It makes no sense. That's his bread and butter. He is a play caller. That's what he does. That's what he's known. That's his reputation. That's where he's had success. If you're going to give that up, who are you? What are you?
Somebody that shouldn't be the head coach of the Jets. I mean, this is what I've been saying for the first, I don't know, after the first two games, I've been saying they need to get rid of Adam Gase. It's not going to get better until they fire him. Him having this conversation publicly about considering giving up play calling duties, I mean, he was bought here to be an offensive guru who he was bought here to get Sam Darnold to realize all of that potential. And he clearly has not done that. So if he's going to relinquish play calling duties, then exactly what is Adam Gase going to do? Because he wasn't bought here for his game management. He wasn't bought here for his leadership intangibles. So what exactly is his value to the organization? Nothing. Why is he here? He's just taking up space at this point, if that's the road he wants to go down. So, you know, I listened to Sam Darnold on the K-Show. He said he's comfortable with Adam calling plays, but it doesn't matter if he's comfortable with it. It's not working. So they need to do something.
Yeah, I don't
and
know
I think
that
something
that
should
point.
Be the organization moving on from Gase, but if they're not going to do that, I don't understand what sense it makes to not make him continue to call plays. I don't understand what that's going to do because it's still going to be Adam Gase's offense. It ain't like they're installing a brand-new offense. This is what they've been putting in all offseason. So I don't know that they're going to, all of a sudden, because you got a new play caller, start running different plays.
Well, you're not going to run different plays. This is just to prove to the fan base and everyone else that it's not his plays, it's the personnel, because that's what he believes. Give me the right players.
But they're still his
works.
Plays, even though it could be Jim Bob Cooter, it could be Dial Log, and they're still his plays.
No, I understand that. You know that because you played. I know that because, yeah. I mean, it's our job to know that. But not everyone else knows that. They'll just look, oh, Gase isn't calling the plays. It's the Coots and it's Loggins, and it still stinks. So maybe it's not Adam Gase. Maybe it's just we don't have enough talent. That's what he's hoping. Because otherwise, you're right. What else? I mean, he becomes a spectator. You're just going to stand on the sideline and mesmerize people with your eyes? Like, what are you doing? Like, what are we paying you to do?
Hey, look at me in my eyes.
You ain't giving motivational speeches. I can promise you that.
No. The whole thing is broken.
And, of course, what do you want Sam Darnold to say? I mean, he's smart enough to raise. He's a smart kid. Like, I mean, as bad as he must think this whole situation is in, you know, the play calling and everything else, do you think he really wants to have to learn another system, a third system going into his fourth year? I mean, that's...
No.
I mean, that's
but he is going to be learning a third system going into his fourth year. He's just not going to be with the Jets.
Right.
Yeah, but he's probably hoping it's Sean Payton's system or Kyle Shanahan's system.
Which it'll probably be. Ugh. Two really good NFC teams.
How
he's
is that possible?
Wind up somewhere great for him.
Dave,
he's
how
gonna
is that?
Wind up in a great situation and good for him. He deserves it.
He does deserve it. I mean, you're going to finally free him and actually get a chance to see what he's really capable of doing. Because you've broken him down, you beat him down. I was listening to Trent Dilfer yesterday, and he echoed what I said yesterday. At a certain point, I mean, when you do this much losing and you have a lack of success, I mean, you start thinking it's you, and you start losing that confidence, and you don't want.
That's why Jamal Adams wanted out. Remember, Jamal Adams kept saying, "I'm not a loser. I'm not a loser," because the stink of losing starts to stick to you, and then people associate you with the lack of success that the Jets organization has had,
and you start associating you with the stink.
Yeah,
and you think it's you, and you start to question what you're capable of doing.
Listen, this is
year
three.
Yeah, if you don't have confidence playing professional sports, good luck.
This is year three of him trying to succeed in this system in the NFL, and it has gone terribly. And I'm not saying it's his fault, but at some point that's got to kind of be
who
you feel you are in the NFL.
But, Dave, this is what I said was going to happen when you're on a team that loses as much as the Giants and the Jets lose. Because when you lose, now we spend the entire week breaking down why you lost and nitpicking the loss. Right, we talked a little bit about how bad Drew Brees was in the first half of the game, but they won the game. So you're not going to harp on all the things he did poorly. But because the Jets and Giants, all they do is lose, all we do is focus on the negatives. How many times Daniel Jones is turning the football over? Some of the bad decisions that Sam Darnold's making. And then these guys hear it. Their families hear it. They know it. They know the conversation is. Daniel Jones, you can clearly tell, he knows the conversation is him turning the football over. So now he's playing the game trying not to make a mistake. Sam Darnold trying to play the game and not make a mistake. You cannot play sports that way. You can't do it. And be the guy that everyone expects you to be. You can't play like that. That's how you ruin players.
I guess the final straw will be if one of those quarterbacks from the New York teams decides that they want to cut off all the TVs in the facility. That's when we'll know definitively that they're not the franchise quarterback.
Listen, if I was on the Jets, I'd take the TVs down anyway. I got to look at my fines on the TV screens. Breaking those anyway.
It's bad. It's bad. I mean, there's no two ways about it. This is bad. What we have here in New York football and both these young quarterbacks, these organizations have done them no favors. None.
Zero. Zero favors. Dude, I remember when I was drafted, right? One of the reasons why Mike Milbury drafted me because I handled the puck. And like all through my entire, I had goalie coaches quit because I was off handling the puck. Like they were sick of it. But I got good at it and I would do it. Every level I played at, I would do it. College, I did it. That's the reason why they drafted me. So I finally get to the NHL, right? And you figure if you're handling the puck as much as I was handling the puck, like you're going to make some mistakes, especially as a young kid. You try to do too much. Similar to like what Daniel Jones and Sam Darnold, like trying to do too much, you make some mistakes. It got to a certain point where, you know, I'd make a mistake. Milbury would call down to the bench. The coach would tell a player, and the player would skate to my net and say, don't handle the puck anymore. Stay in the net. Okay, I'll stay in the net. That game went by. I didn't say. Do you think one time in practice, we actually practiced them dumping the puck in and me having an exchange with our defenseman? One time. Not one time ever did we practice that. I was just expected to go out and be able to communicate with defensemen that I didn't even know, and it was just going to work perfectly. Not one time do we practice it. Now, how does that make any sense?
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
And I'm sure the results were.
Well, at a certain point, I got so afraid to handle the puck that I would stop the puck behind the net, and then I would, like, rather than making a quick decision where it's a quick pass or like, okay, I'm going to clear the puck up the middle, I would hesitate, and then, of course, as soon as you hesitate,
right,
now all of a sudden it's a turnover or whatever else.
Right. Right.
And now I'm like, I can't, I just, I must have forgot how to handle the puck. I can't do it anymore.
Right. And look at these
bad
guys.
Stuff happens.
And look at these two quarterbacks, what they look like right now.
It's exactly what they look like. They look timid. They look like they're hesitant to make plays because they don't want to make a mistake. It's like the CYA. Like, even if we lose, as long as I don't turn the football over, like, it won't, like, all the blame won't be on me. Which is a terrible place to be as a young kid trying to figure it out.
And the organizations have done them no favors with talent around them. None.
No, not at all. I mean,
and the one guy that
no
you thought was going to help Daniel Jones goes out for the entire season with a devastating knee injury.
Well, plus you got no Sterling Shepard, too. Let's not forget that. And, I mean,
right.
And the one guy that would have made it all better, and I know he was tough to deal with, but I think part of it was because he was sick of having, you know, Eli Manning throwing the ball, was Odell Beckham Jr. It's a whole different offense.
Yeah, he would have made a big difference. Can we stop with the I get it, that Shepard not being here is not great, but he's nothing more than an average receiver.
Yeah, but he's another target. I mean, it would be
and you're
nice.
Right, but he's an average receiver. Like, even when he's in and playing at the best of his ability, he's an average receiver.
Yeah, but I would rather have him, if I'm Daniel Jones, I'd rather have him in the lineup than not.
Yeah, of course. Then Ratley, yes, of course.
Yeah, he's a dependable player. Like, if Sterling Shepard's in there, you're probably looking at it saying maybe you don't get that OPI call on that touchdown throw to Slayton. Just
and he's going to be there. Where, I mean, he's going to be exactly where you need him to be.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to run the route that you need him. And as a young guy, you can trust that.
Yeah.
That's like when
having a receiver that's reliable and that's going to be at the depth that he's supposed to be with all the routes, having everything sync up, the timing of it, that matters. That matters. So it could it make a big difference for Daniel Jones? Yeah, it could. But the biggest problem with Daniel Jones is that he hasn't been able to cut down on the turnovers, whether it's throwing interceptions or fumbles in the pocket. Like, that's the stuff that he's got to stop. Until he can fix that, I don't know how you see the kind of jump that you're looking for from the player.
Well, I don't know that you will. Yeah, I don't think you will.
And you get Washington.
So you don't think, hold on, Rick, you don't think he's going to cut down on the turnovers, or what are you saying?
No, I think he's making a concerted effort to try to turn to try to eliminate the turnovers. But to your point, if the turnovers continue, you can't have success. You can't win football games if you turn the football over that much.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So until he figures that out, and I think part of that is you got to fix this offensive line. Andrew Thomas has to be better. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Clearly, you miss Nate Solder because, you know, putting Andrew Thomas right at left tackle hasn't worked out.
Yeah.
Has not worked out.
Yeah, he probably doesn't get exposed as much if he's playing right tackle.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is plus
the quarterback can actually see if he whiffs on a block. That matters, too.
That does matter. I don't know, man. None of it's good. None of it's good. You got no Yankees, so now we're stuck talking about these football teams. I got Joe Flacco.
But it was nice to see the Rays take care of business yesterday.
Yep. How about Altuve making that error that then leads to a
love it.
Homer?
Love it.
Right?
Love
you
it.
You got to love that.
Got the heart of the cheating scandal being the reason why they lose. Love it.
Told you.
Love it.
Yeah, but see, Tampa Bay's going to beat up on Houston. I told you guys that.
But, Dave, this is what happens, though. I mean, you saw what Houston was doing offensively before the series. I know everyone wants to blame the offense. You got to get the big hit. This is what good pitching can do to you, man.
This is what it does. Tampa is a better team than Houston.
But, Tampa is a damn good team. And when you start looking at it, I was looking at some of the numbers and everything today, and I'm not going to do the same thing that Don did yesterday on the K-Show, just set math back years and years and years.
That was great. You know what I love when Don goes, stop yelling at me.
I don't know if he was counting with rocks and sticks.
But
I don't know
what he's like. And this guy's on-base percentage is .564. And Michael's like, it can't be. Like, how could Don thought someone's on-base was in the 500s?
No, and Aaron Judge, yeah, he averages like 45 home runs a year. Over 162, and Kay's like, nah, that can't be right. No, but anyway, I mean, you look at, so I was looking at what the Yankees did over the last 2 years in one-run games, because the Rays are, I mean, you saw it this season, like the close games, one-run games.
And five or something. Mm-hmm.
No, but you get used to playing in games like that, right? Like I think last night was a perfect example. You know, close game, Chargers over the last couple years have found ways to lose. More veteran team, Saints, they find ways to win. So over the last 2 years in one-run games, so the Rays were 14-5 this year. 2019, they were 23-16, as opposed to the Yankees, who in 2019 were 18-19, and in 2020, 6-7.
Yep.
That's a big difference.
Especially when you're that close.
Especially when you're that close. And that becomes a difference, especially in the postseason. And I'm telling you, man, you can say the hitting, but the fact is, I mean, the Yankees and Aaron Boone and the analytic nerds and everything else, they trusted, what, four pitchers? Of all the guys that you had on your ALDS roster, you trusted four of them?
That's right.
And the one guy you trusted, he wasn't available. Green wasn't available in that game.
Green wasn't available. Had to go right
to Britton Chapman.
You trusted Chapman. He allowed another huge home run. You trusted Britton. He was good. You trusted Cole. He was great.
Yeah, but you know what it is, though? It feels like the difference between Kevin Cash and Aaron Boone and the way they manage is Kevin Cash doesn't manage scared. Like, they trust. They have so much trust in what they do. Is they're willing to live with the result. Like, this is who I'm going to. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. I'm going to live with it. Like, Aaron Boone couldn't wait to get out of the dugout and get Britton out of that game. It's another lefty coming up. Britton's been rolling. You can't let him get that last out? I mean, come on. And then it's a bunch of righties. There's no one else in your bullpen you trust. You got to go right to Chapman.
That's it.
Chapman's going to have to get that many outs.
And God knows how many. I mean, where would they have gone after him?
That's a great question.
Right?
It's a great question.
Because he couldn't have gone all night.
No, who do you go to? I mean, you don't trust Ottavino.
Do you go to Garcia? I don't know. We'll never know.
Oh, man, it frustrates me, man.
It's another lost season. Sam Darnold, Jets quarterback, was on the Michael Kay Show. Yesterday, we've discussed it earlier on this show on Adam Gase potentially giving up play calling. Here is Jets quarterback Sam Darnold on that very question.
If he decides to do that, obviously I'm comfortable with, you know, Adam calling the plays, and it's been that way for about a year and some change now, so obviously it's his decision.
I don't know what the poor guy's supposed to say. Like, you put him in such a bad situation, right? I mean, he's 23 years old. They can't win a game. He's not healthy. The team stinks. The coach is on the hot seat. And he's got to answer questions. I feel bad for him, actually.
Yeah, this is why you'd be hard pressed to have me doing any of these interviews if I was the quarterback of the Jets right now. I'm not sure you could pay me enough to have to sit and answer those questions. Because you're right. I mean, what is he supposed to say?
Right?
I mean, even if he doesn't believe what he's saying, which I have a hard time believing he actually believes what he's saying, that he trusts Adam Gase calling these plays because he hasn't been good doing it. I mean, there's nothing else he can say.
Yeah, well, he can answer that a different way, though, guys. I mean, he could absolutely come out and say, you know what, I'm open to it because clearly what we've been doing hasn't been working. We're 0-5 right now. I mean, you could take the same stance that your head coach took. I mean, that's what Adam Gase said, essentially. So, I mean, there has to be some level of accountability in what you're doing. And right now, that hasn't been the case. So if you take the play calling duties from Adam Gase, yeah, we don't think it's going to make a huge difference, but at least it's acknowledging a failing on the behalf of the head coach as far as the sequencing of plays and how he's doing things with his game day operation. So, I mean, I don't think that's out of pocket for Sam to say something like that, because the reality is they're judged based on their record, and they're 0-5. Everything you're doing right now should be questioned.
Yeah, but
absolutely,
I think
it should be. We're almost a third of the way through the season, and you still ain't got a win.
But him answering the question that way, I mean, all that does is set off a firestorm that he doesn't want to have to deal with. He says that, then people start connecting the dots. I mean, that's...
You say it's a firestorm, though, Rico. I mean, it's already a firestorm, ain't it?
Right.
They talking about Trevor Lawrence.
Well, that's being the quarterback of the team next year. Nothing he says can help. Nothing he says is gonna put any positive light or spin on the situation.
But it ain't going to make it worse. How's it going to make it worse?
If he says, you know what, I think that's the way to go. I think moving on from Adam Gase as the play caller is the right decision.
No, I didn't say that. That's not what I said.
No. You said, how does it make it worse? I think that makes it worse. I think it could be made worse.
To say that it's fair to question everything that we're doing because we aren't winning games? How does that make it worse? That's
because
the truth.
Because you're insinuating. I mean, that's a no-win proposition for Sam Darnold. Like, the result can't get worse, but as far as what he has to deal with inside the law, I mean, that's not something you
So he's got to be good soldier is what he's got
to
do.
Has to be.
And just whatever you think.
Because everyone knows what's going on. I mean, at this point, I don't care. I mean, even you broke down Ira. I mean, at this point, I think everyone understands what's happening here.
Even Ira's broken. Let's see if he still is. Ira, are you fixed or are you still broken? Ira in Staten Island, you're on 98.7.
No, definitely broken. But, you know, you got to it could take a long time before it gets fixed. Hopefully by training camp next year, we'll see what happens. But, no, I feel bad for Sam. And I understand both points. But, you know, you mentioned Bell. And, oh, by the way, Herbert. He reminds me of a young Drew Bledsoe. This kid's got a lot of special talent, and I think
he moves a lot better than Drew Bledsoe.
Well, that's true, but I guess maybe it's the size and the throwing motion, but he's in the right system with the right pieces around him. Unfortunately, Sam doesn't have that. But, you know, talking about the play calling, you know, Rick, I understand your point, you know, maybe just passing on to somebody else, and maybe that's a way showing there's no talent here, but I take it a different way because I've seen this in the past. Quite frankly, I think he was given an ultimatum, and I think it was, you know, pretty much he got one foot out the door, manage the team for the rest of the year and let somebody else call the plays. What difference it'll be, who knows? It's the same playbook, but you know what? Maybe on third and one next week, maybe if there is a new play caller, maybe don't hand it off to
West. But Ira, you know, my point is this, Ira, because I kind of feel the same way that you feel. I mean, we heard rumblings a couple weeks ago, you know, before that Denver game. If he lost that Denver game, he could be fired, and they chose not to fire him. I mean, this could be Joe Douglas telling him, hey, something has to change, and if that means you not calling plays. My point is, if you're Adam Gase, for you to agree to that, knowing that you got one foot out the door, because that's the only reason you have this job, in the back of his mind, what I'm saying is maybe he's thinking that even if someone else calls the plays, there's still not enough talent, so it'll be equally as bad, and it'll take some of the pressure off me.
Yeah, and he is probably right in one way, but in all due respect, you know, Kuda did a decent job with Stafford, and if they're going to elevate anybody, I would like to see Kuda get it, because having Logans do it is just, you know, basically Gase calling the plays. At least Kuda may have a little more imagination. Maybe we'll get some motion back there instead of just everybody staying in one spot, but once again, it's just a shame. I hate talking like this. And, you know, we'll see. Just hopefully the right decisions are made at the end of the year and we could put this behind us and we'll see what's going to happen next year. But once they have to change the structure. I'm beating a dead horse. Everybody's sick of hearing about it. Until the structure of that organization's changed, I just don't see it changing.
I wish I was a dead horse at this point. It's been, 7 weeks almost now?
It's bad. Thanks for the call, Hira. It's bad.
All right.
Even if you make a change, what's going to improve? You know,
yeah, I don't know if it can't. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, I've never been on an NFL sideline, but I mean, when Adam Gase says, you know, he would consider not calling the plays, I don't think that, you know, gives Jim Bob Cooter the opportunity to just call whatever the hell he wants.
No, they go through the game plan throughout the course of the week, and they have certain plays for certain downs and distances, and then certain plays for situations. Like, the plays are grouped into different packages, and it's all up to whoever has the play-calling responsibilities to sequence the plays as they see fit. But, I mean, there is some accountability in terms of how they structure the play sheet. You know what I'm saying? When they're looking down on that thing at game day, okay, this down and distance, okay, these are the set of plays that we have. I got to pick the right one. That's kind of how it works. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. I just think.
Okay.
I have a hard time believing that Adam Gase, even if he's not calling the plays, the offense, like you said, is not going to change. It's going to be the same offense.
It's going to be the same plays, yeah.
Yeah, but the sequencing of plays could be different, but it's going to be the same offense.
Yeah, it's going to be the same and with a little different flavor to it. But you can't imagine you're going to make a change at who's calling the plays and all of a sudden you're going to become this dynamic offensive team.
No, I can't imagine Adam Gase, who has been a play caller his entire professional career, I can't imagine that he would want to give that up. Like, he made his name as a play caller with the Denver Broncos and with the Chicago Bears. I can't see how he would want to give that up. So it gives some credence to what Rick and Ira were saying, that there could have been an ultimatum type of situation between Joe Douglas and Chris Johnson in terms of what Adam Gase is doing. And the one thing that I've learned in relationships, regardless of whether they're personal or business, when you got to give an ultimatum, the relationship is over because there'll never be trust between the two parties ever again. It just won't be. So, to the point that everybody's been making, how does this get better? How does taking play calling from Adam Gase make it better? I don't think it makes it better. I think it makes it worse. That's why I think you just need to go ahead and have a clean break. Because at this point, the players don't know who to listen to. I mean, how much respect do you think the players have for Adam Gase, knowing that he's probably not going to finish the season as the head coach?
You know what he is. He's a lame duck coach.
But you can
see it. The question is, when does he go?
And they probably didn't have a whole lot of respect for him to start with. When you have the game go the way that it went in Buffalo, and then the head coach saying, yeah, I wouldn't change anything that I did in terms of play calling. We just got to play better. Like, that is the head coach throwing the players under the bus. And he does it all the time. So, I mean, at this point, to me, just go ahead and have a clean break. Dancing around it because you've never done it before. Oh, we don't fire coaches in the middle of the season. Okay, whatever. There's a first time for everything. And it feels like, based on the product that we're seeing on the field, that it's getting close to being that time.
Yeah, it certainly does. Doesn't feel like they're going to do it, though. Like, for whatever reason, they don't want to make the change with Adam Gase.
Give it a while. The Giants said that once upon a time, too.
They did.
With Ben McAdoo. What happened with that?
You're right. But that was, what, week 15?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We will.
But think about it, David. It got to the point where you had to fire a guy in week 15, knowing you only got three more games left. You couldn't wait it out three more games because it stunk so bad.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is give the Jets some time. They're going to continue to stink, especially with the schedule they got coming up.
But Ben McAdoo gave you, I mean, he gave you the perfect out with how he handled that Eli Manning situation.
Terrible.
He gave us the perfect out when he decided to slick back his hair after the first year.
Yeah, also a great point. I mean, that's also a fantastic point. You're delaying the inevitable. You take away his ability to call plays. I mean, what good is he at that point?
What good is he anyway?
You've neutered your head coach.
Yeah.
Essentially.
It's going to happen now. It's going to happen week 10, week 12, week 14 after the season. This is going to happen. The question is,
I think a lot of this has to do with the optics, and I know that word gets thrown out a lot, as far as, you know, how other potential head coaches view the Jets. Like, they gave Adam Gase every opportunity to figure it out, and he just couldn't figure it out, as opposed to pulling the plug on it.
Right. They're not a team that's going to be completely reactionary. They're going to take their time. I think that's
fair. Which we also know is not true.
No.
They listen.
Ugh. I don't know. All right, 800-919-3776. We got Andy from Merrick is ready to go with his NBA questions today. We have Mike Tenenbaum ready to go at 10 o'clock. CeCe Sabathia at 10:30, but first.
Can we get into the NBA, too, at some point? We didn't talk about it much yesterday. The LeBron James speech after the game. Can we get into that a little bit?
We can get into it.
All right. Of course.
All right.
You got to give Canty a little opportunity to feel good about himself.
My man. I started the show yesterday.
Yeah, but it was only a couple minutes. You know, Canty had the disappointing Yankees again. Like, this is all he's got.
All he's got? His team just won a championship.
Yeah, which is what I mean. I mean, his Cowboys, they stink. The Giants
Rick wants
stink.
To let me bask in the glow of the Lakers championship. I don't see this as a bad thing, Dave. I don't understand why you're questioning it.
No, I don't
let him
question
cut a little
basking. I question, like,
What kind of guy are you? Just kick him right out of bed? They kick him right out of bed? That's it?
It's
no
all
cuddle,
he's
no,
got?
No pillow talk?
He had
talk?
A team just go to the ALDS. He had a team just win a championship. You have a team that can't win a game. You have a team that can't make the playoffs when everybody makes the playoffs.
Well, timeout. My team made the Eastern Conference Finals. Relax.
Then I got nothing.
It was fine. Okay. So this is a three-man show. At least let one of us enjoy the glory a little bit. Let him.
What you mean your team got nothing? You got the first overall pick. Chill out.
Yeah, you did get the first overall pick. Stop it.
Please. Let Canty lay in bed, smoke a cigarette for a second. Would you please?
Can there you go.
Light them all up. First, he could tell us
more like
he
a Monte Cristo, but I'm just saying.
About sport cards. Let's go there. What? Bring him in.
And good morning, DCR. I am coming to you live from the Rothenberg basement via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Hotline. And I have four NBA draft questions for you boys. Starting with, in the last 25 years, Duke University has produced three number one overall picks. Can you name them?
Elton Brand.
Zion.
That's one.
Kyrie Irving.
Two.
Zion.
Zion.
Bang! Team effort. In those same last 25 years, the Kentucky Wildcats have had three number one overall picks. Name them.
A.D.
Anthony Towns.
That's two.
Last 25 years, we got two.
You got Carl Anthony Towns and the Brow. Who's the third one? Come on, boys.
Is,
you got
on, Dave. This is college, Dave. This is supposed to be what you do.
I do it, but I can't think of this person.
A lightning quick lefty guard.
John Wall with it. John
there
Wall
go,
with
DC.
It.
DC, nice.
He's not a lefty.
Oh, yes, he is.
Who are you to question Andy from Merrick, by the way?
Yeah, I think he is, Dave.
John Wall.
We'll debate
lefty?
That off air. Yeah, I waited tonight for dinner. Who
is
the last boys' number one overall draft pick from the Big Ten Conference?
It can't be Glenn Robinson, can it?
Relax. Relax. Big Ten.
From the Big Ten. Oh, bust. Greg Oden?
There you go, CC. Love it that you come up with bust before his name.
Yeah.
All right, boys.
That's not fair. He got hurt. That's not fair.
Finally, the great Dr. J signed as an undrafted free agent with the ABA's Virginia Squires. But can you tell me which NBA team drafted him number 12 overall in the 1972 draft?
The Bucks.
The Bucks is correct. He would have been playing with Kareem and Oscar.
I am the smartest man alive!
Fellas, let's be careful out there, and as always, stay healthy, boy.
Thank you, Andy. That's the great Andy from Merrick. So you guys are convinced that John Wall is a lefty?
You say you guys.
I thought he might have been. Listen, he's one of the best ball handlers I've ever seen, Dave. I thought he might have been left-handed.
I believe they call that the stranger.
I'm supposed to go right past these, I'm told.
Could you find it? Why don't you Google it?
I can't do it when we're on the air. When we go to break and get ready for Mike Tenenbaum, I will look
how
up
can
John
you not
Wall
do
shooting
it?
The ball.
How I don't understand how you can't do it while you're on the air. Are you holding
That's
your microphone?
That's a great question.
I'm talking.
You can't talk and type at the same time? No.
I don't think you can multitask like that.
No. Really. All right, you go ahead. Lead a segment. Go ahead. Lead a segment and then look up Josh Allen stats from this week. Go ahead,
Josh
Rick.
Allen, what do you mean?
Talk us through it, and then look up Josh Allen's stats from the last time he played.
Josh Allen from the last time he played, you want?
Yes.
Why would I go Josh Allen now as opposed to, I mean, I hope you guys are having a good day. Last time Josh Allen played was against the Las Vegas Raiders. He was 24-34 for 288. Two touchdowns, no interceptions. Sacked once.
All right, nice job. I'll look up at the break, John Wall, whether he's a righty or a lefty.
No, he's a right-handed.
He's a righty. See, there you go.
Don't blame us. This is not on us. This is the guy who lives in your basement that you let on the air. It's just, I mean, he's coming
don't
with
blame me. I go, wait, he's a lefty, and you're like, oh, come on. Come on, Dave. You should know this. He's a lefty. I know he wasn't
I said, how dare you question Andy from Merrick? This guy works for you. He lives in your basement.
So maybe I should be questioning. Maybe we should all be questioning Andy from Merrick.
No, maybe you should go downstairs once in a while and just check in with him and make sure that his questions are legit.
That's a valid point.
Listen, I don't think we need to question Andy from Merrick. Andy from Merrick works, okay? He works for our show. What doesn't work is the Jets being as bad as they are. So we can question that.
It's a good 8. Mike Tenenbaum joins us now, and then CeCe Sabathia at 10:30. Mike, good morning. I imagine you're doing well and hydrated, and everything is solid and good for you.
It is, and good to be with you guys. I'm looking forward to hearing what CeCe Sabathia has to say about all the great baseball being played as well.
Yep, we've seen some excellent baseball so far in the postseason. All right, so let me start with the injury from Dak Prescott. I mean, just gruesome, awful, brutal injury. What do you think is next? Do you think now you envision next year Dak another franchise tag? Is that the only way that this goes and moves forward for the Cowboys and Dak?
You know, I had suggested yesterday on ESPN that they should try to do a shorter-term deal, maybe a two-year deal that has some guaranteed money, some incentives, meaning they share some of the risk in terms of rehab, but to try to get a deal done as soon as the year is over. So you take the sort of economics off the table and the stress about that and let him worry about rehab and really approach this as a partner and to stand shoulder to shoulder with Dak. And then if that doesn't work out, then I think if you're Dallas, you do have to franchise him because you just can't let him leave, because even despite having this catastrophic injury, guys, so many teams need quarterbacks. Like, you can make an argument that up to a third of the league could be looking for a quarterback next year. I think somebody would assume the risk of injury.
Mike, so what are the Dallas Cowboys now? I mean, Andy Dalton's not your, you know, regular run-of-the-mill backup. I mean, the guy's, he's been a starting quarterback, had success. So what is this Dallas Cowboys team now?
I think they still have a chance to win the division, Rick. When you look at the NFC East this year, and you just say through the lens of, hey, this is an 11-game sprint, does Andy Dalton leading the Dallas Cowboys give them the best chance to win the division? I just think, you know, you could basically eliminate Washington and the Giants. So now you're saying it's going to be, you know, the Philadelphia, excuse me, or Dallas. And I think right now, given Carson Wentz's inconsistencies, Andy Dalton may give him the best chance to win the division.
Mike, I want to ask you about the quarterback situation with the other team that was on the field in AT&T Stadium on Sunday. Daniel Jones committed his 31st turnover, which resulted in a touchdown for the Dallas Cowboys. At what point do you have to question, you know, the progression of Daniel Jones and whether or not he's your franchise guy?
You know, Chris, I was thinking a lot about this. Like, I want to start with another team in the division, which is what Ron Rivera did. Ron Rivera inherited Dwayne Haskins, and he went from first to third. And what was interesting about that was 2 weeks ago we heard Ron Rivera talk about how, hey, there was growing pains with Cam Newton, and we're going to survive those. And Cam Newton is an incredible worker, always the first guy in. And I think the fact that Haskins went from first string to third string told me that there could be something there about they're not happy about his work ethic. And I think now you look at Joe Judge, and if he says, hey, ball security is really important, and you look at the fact that besides Carson Wentz, Daniel Jones has 8 turnovers, which is only surpassed by Wentz's 10, I think at some point he really has to think about benching him and saying, hey, the standards are the standards, and it applies to Daniel Jones and everybody else.
Mike, how do you bench him, though? Like, I understand in a perfect world maybe you have time, but isn't the one answer we need this year to know whether Daniel Jones is the answer or you have to draft another quarterback? If you bench him, you lose that time. I mean, you lose games of knowing if he's going to be a good quarterback or not in this league, no?
I think the one answer you need this year is, can you build a winning culture? I think that's much more important. You look at Bill Belichick in year one in New England, and he had 4 quarterbacks, and they paid Drew Bledsoe over $100 million. And a year later, it was Tom Brady, and it was all about the culture and standards. And I'm not saying you bench Daniel Jones and play Colt McCoy and feel like that gives you a better chance to win, but I think what it does, it sends a message to, importantly, Andrew Thomas and all these other young guys that they are your future. And those are the players that's really who your audience are, which is the standards are the standards. And I don't care if you're Daniel Jones, this year's first-round pick, or anybody else for that matter. The standards are the standards. If you don't play up to it, it's not good enough, and you're going to be on the bench. And I think that's more important than anything, is Joe Judge has to say, this is what I stand for, and nothing else is acceptable.
Mike Tannenbaum joins us on the show. My only problem with that, Mike, is this, and this is why I'm always of the opinion that the GM and the coach should be tied at the hip, like it's kind of what you've seen in San Francisco. Like that's how I feel like it should be done. But I mean, Dave Gettleman is on the hot seat. He just hired Joe Judge. If Joe Judge turns around and benches Daniel Jones. I mean, is that something that Dave Gettleman is going to allow him to do?
Well, you know, every situation I've been in for over two decades, this person has to, I don't say, that person has to, I don't say, regardless of that, Rick, the head coach has to determine play time. Because if you start getting into this committee approach, it gives you no chance to win over a long period of time. And the head coach has to say, you're playing, you're not. And the players have to look at one leader. Now, when it gets into trades and how much a player should get paid, that's a different conversation. But again, you know, you're looking at this draft class and, you know, long-term Xavier McKinney or Matt Peart, their third-round pick, you have to tell them that, look, like, you're all going to be judged fairly and consistently. And again, Daniel Jones, you have 8 turnovers. Only Carson Wentz has more. I am telling you that ball security is important to me. I think it's the opposite, guys. If he doesn't bench Daniel Jones and these turnovers continue, I think Joe Judge loses credibility because they're going to say, like, well, that's BS. You're saying one thing, but you have double standards. And that's really the worst thing that could happen if I'm Joe Judge. So I think at some point he may say this is an opportunity. And again, I go back to Ron Rivera. Ron Rivera didn't make Dwayne Haskins the second-string quarterback. He made him the third, and I don't think that was by accident. So I think this is a situation that bears to be closely monitored.
Isn't that a different situation, though, Mike? And that, I mean, that Ron Rivera and the guys they brought in didn't draft Dwayne Haskins. Dave Gettleman drafted Daniel Jones. I mean, his job is going to be – his job security is determined by how good Daniel Jones is. If all of a sudden, right, I mean, again, week 7, you decide to bench Daniel Jones, I mean, that writing's on the wall. Dave Gettleman's getting fired.
Right, but again, if I'm Joe Judge, like, look, I got a partner in Dave Gettleman, but I got to do what's best for the team. I'm the guy up in front of these guys every single day. And it's my credibility. While it's our program, like, I can't say that turning the ball over is acceptable. And the more he turns the ball over and the more you let him play, players are going to be like, hey, you know, I could be late. You know what? Like, this guy's turning the ball over. It's okay. And, you know, what are the standards here? So, again, like, I go back to Dave's point, which is, like, what are they trying to accomplish? To me, it's very easy. In year one, what we're trying to accomplish is to say Joe Judge is in charge. The standards are the standards, and that goes for player one as well as player 53.
Well, Mike, you're talking about standards, and you brought up this player's name a little bit earlier. You talked about Andrew Thomas. And in the Rams game, he allowed 6 pressures and 2 sacks. Didn't get much better against the Cowboys. 9 pressures and 1 sack that ended up being a scoop and score for a touchdown. At what point do you look at Andrew Thomas and say, maybe we need to give this guy some time to just take a step back, take a breath, because clearly he's a liability on that offensive line.
Yeah, and to be fair, I really liked him. I saw him personally, and I thought it was a really good pick, and hopefully over time it will be. And again, you know, Chris, we've talked about this before. He does remind me of DeBrickashaw Ferguson, and it takes a minute. You know, he's going against guys that have 3 or 4 years of offseason programs and NFL bodies, and this is a guy that, you know, again, none of these rookies had a chance to be in an offseason program. And as you know, Chris, as a defensive lineman, if you can't anchor and really just settle down against the bull rush, it's really hard because now you're facing an opponent that has every pitch. They can counter, they can speed, they can bull rush you, and you got to be able to foundationally start with a good lower base. So I still think he's going to be a great pick for the next 10 years, but there are growing pains. And I think you can, from a game plan standpoint, you know, Jason Garrett could – chip, they could slide protection, you know, they can make things a little bit easier for him so he's not just, you know, growing up in the left-hand lane where, you know, he could drive a little bit slowly, help him, and then, you know, let him progress slowly.
Mike, you can understand how there could be some frustration from Giants fans, though, especially when they see Becton and Wills and Wirfs having the success that they are early on in their careers. Those are offensive tackles that were taken in the top half of the first round. And those guys seem like they're a lot further ahead than Andrew Thomas. Yet Andrew Thomas was the first one to come off the board.
Yep, no, that's totally fair. And, you know, Becton, I thought was playing really well, obviously, before he got hurt. And we'll see, you know, how it plays out. But that's totally fair. I do, again, I believe in Andrew Thomas. It hasn't clicked just as quickly as I think they hope. And then, you know, you layer on Nate Solder, and I can see why there's frustration. And I think, you know, philosophically, Dave Gettleman had the right idea about offensive linemen. We talked about this, you know, Zeitler and Hernandez, but they're just not playing as well on the road, especially, like, that's where you want your offensive line to really step up, is to take a team on the road, give yourself a chance to win, which they did again on Sunday. But these turnovers will just keep killing the Giants if they don't clean them up.
Mike Tannenbaum with us here, 98.7 ESPN. You talk about the mistakes. You talk about Daniel Jones. You talk about you might put him onto the bench. Are you soured on him? Like, we're a year and five games in, and you don't sound like you're in love with him. Are you soured on the young quarterback for the Giants?
You know, it's interesting. I saw him in college. I saw a lot of the same turnovers, and, you know, it's interesting. You know, we could put Daniel Jones, Mark Sanchez, and Sam Darnold in very similar conversations, which is you want to believe that they're going to grow out of turning the ball over. And I lived it with Mark Sanchez. The good of Mark Sanchez was a guy that we won four playoff games with him, took us to back-to-back championship games. You know, we see Sam Darnold do incredible things, especially with his feet. We've seen Daniel Jones make throws that are really impressive with accuracy and timing. If you don't clean that up, you're going to have a short career. And I think with Daniel Jones, what concerns me, Dave, is we saw it at Duke, and it hasn't gotten better. And again, there's only one quarterback in the NFL right now that has more turnovers. And if we said, hey, you know what, it's a little bit like Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert's made a couple of mistakes, but, you know, by and large, we're seeing really dynamic development. And we're seeing good development with Daniel Jones. But at some point, Dave, you have to say enough is enough.
It's unbelievable how quickly we forget. I mean, Daniel Jones, if he had played a full season last year, would have set the touchdown record for rookies. And now we're in a situation with no offseason, a new system and everything else. We want to hold this kid, you know, his feet to the fire and put him on the bench. I mean, this is 101. Let's just spend the next however many years just drafting quarterbacks in New York and just ruining them, just one by one. We'll draft them in the first round. We'll just keep ruining them. It's unbelievable to me. Mike, last one for me. And I know you hired Adam Gase, so you like Adam Gase. But if Adam Gase relinquishes calling plays, what good is it for me to have Adam Gase as my head coach?
Yeah, I was really preparing for this question, knowing that it was coming today, guys. You know, here's the only other thing I could say is, and look, you know, your record is what your record is, and they haven't won a game, and candidly, they haven't been competitive. At least, you know, we could say the Giants have been. One thing I would say, though, is, look, you can make a change, and you'd feel better for about 10 minutes, but when you look at a guy like Peyton Manning, right, and Peyton Manning's been coached by everybody known to mankind over the course of his career, the best year he ever had was with Adam Gase. He took our team in Miami to the playoffs. You know, that's not hope. That's not speculation. That actually happened. So, again, I know the easy thing is to rip the Band-Aid off and say, hey, it's not working, but I just believe a little, you know, in continuity. And, you know, we've seen other coaches relinquish play calling, and it can make a difference. But, look, it's harder and harder to defend each week. This is obviously, you know, for him going to be personally a big, big week with playing the Dolphins. And, you know, let's see if that makes a difference.
Mike, how do they handle the quarterback situation? Because I know they only scored 10 points against the Cardinals on Sunday, but the offense looked markedly better than it had the previous four games. So Sam is dealing with a little bit of a shoulder. How do you handle that dynamic between Joe Flacco and then going back to Sam?
Yeah, I thought the thing that I liked about Flacco's game, I thought he was really quick decision-making-wise, like ball got out of his hands. And the only other thing you would say is they really haven't been healthy at that skill player position in almost 2 years where they've had a full set of players. So I think you just err on the side of caution, keep playing Flacco, let Sam's shoulder heal slowly. But I agree, Chris. I thought Flacco looked a little bit better than I thought. You know, he had better, you know, tempo to his game. And I just like to see them out there, you know, give me Bell, Perryman, Denzel Mims, Crowder, and then let's see how that looks. Now, you know, I know everyone's dealing with injuries and it's, you know, it is what it is, but that's the one thing you could say is like they've just been decimated at the skill player position.
Mike, is it me or do you sound vivacious today? Do you sound energized and very uplifted?
Well, I appreciate that, Dave. I do use X2 Performance, which is an all-natural, clean ingredient energy drink that you can go to x2performance.com, and it's something that I use and a lot of professional athletes use. It's a great, healthy alternative to some of these other commercial products, so I would suggest it, and I appreciate you asking.
Absolutely, and I'll continue to ask because it's something I like to know every single week. Mike, beautiful stuff from you. We appreciate you, and I know you're going to be listening closely in a few minutes when the great CC Sabathia joins the show.
Hey guys, I'm making a prediction that next week when we speak, somebody in New York's going to have a win. And I'm not saying it's Rutgers. I just think that this is the week that someone's going to break through here, and we're not going to be sitting here talking about two winless teams. next Tuesday at 10 a.m. That's my bold prediction for the week.
That's easy to say when the Giants play the Washington football team. Stop it, Mike.
Well, come on, Chris. I'm looking for something here to build on, right? We got to walk. You know, we got to crawl before we can run, right?
Yeah, you're right.
We'll take anything we can get at this point. Mike, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good one.
All right, guys. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. That, of course, is Mike Tenenbaum, who makes the bold prediction that the Giants will beat Washington. The Giants are, a 3.5-point favorite in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, for your mental health, the Giants need to win that game.
Did you see ESPN's latest power rankings?
Well, the Giants 33rd?
No, do you see what it says about the Jets?
That's what I was saying. Oh, yeah. Rich Samini said the weakness of the Jets is football.
Yeah, football.
It's football.
Weakness of the Jets is football.
God.
And Rich is so fair.
No, but you killed it. He's done, too. I mean, he's him and Ira, same boat. He's done trying to be nice.
Yeah, but Rich is the most fair. Like, he's not looking for a page click, a page view, people jumping on what he's saying. Like, he's just an honest journalist. And for him to be at the point where he's like, I just can't even believe it anymore. What's wrong with the team? Football's wrong with the team?
Dave, they've turned Rich Samidi into the booth announcer in Major League. That's what they've done.
It really is. It really is unbelievable. So we'll see. I mean, Jets are 9-point underdogs, so hopefully the Giants find their way to a victory this week. Now, today on ESPN Daily, the Buffalo Bills are 4-0, face the Titans tonight. That game, by the way, definitely will go on. Here's the case for why these Bills could, yes, go all the way. That's on ESPN Daily. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. So CeCe Sabathia will join us in just a couple of moments. Could you imagine that, Rick, if the Bills, with their third-year quarterback, Josh Allen, went all the way?
No. No, why would you even do that? I don't understand why you wouldn't say something like that.
Well, I mean, that's the tease for ESPN Daily, the podcast.
Yeah, I don't love it. No, I don't love it. Yeah, I mean, that's not... That's
asking you the question they have in the podcast.
Yeah, I don't appreciate the question. Because, I mean, the reason I know why you asked it. Because you're a bad guy. Because you're all upset that Mike Tannenbaum said that they should bench Daniel Jones.
No, I don't think that's crazy at all, moving on from Daniel Jones. I don't. He looks like he's regressing. And the problem is it him or is it the team is so bad around him? I don't even have the answer for it. It's awful.
Well, it's a new system. I'd say it's probably both. Your offensive line stinks. I mean, I just name it.
But if you go 1-15 and you wind up with the second pick in the draft and you're in love with Fields or Lawrence, do you not take one of those guys?
Yeah, you probably do. But yeah. I'd have a hard time believing that Dave Gettleman would be on board with – I mean, the only reason he's going to keep his
Dave
job
Dave Gettleman's
is
not going to be
Daniel
on board
with
anything.
Success.
He will not be on the boat. If they wind up at 1-15 or 2-14.
Speaking of boats, it's all went downhill since you were on that boat. That boat picture was the beginning of the end.
That was the end. Forget about the beginning. That was it. Completely.
Well, no, that was
apart.
The beginning because that picture was taken before you actually played in Green Bay.
Right. I think they're like 4-79 since that boat picture. Oh. Very bad football. All right, let's bring him in. CeCe Sabathia joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Now, CeCe's teamed up with DraftKings for the MLB postseason. DraftKings is bringing fans closer to all the MLB postseason games. CeCe, we appreciate it. We haven't spoken to you in quite a while. Here's my question for you, and I think about this all the time, because I say this, that the Yankees, and I'll be honest, I think they failed this season, right? For what the expectation was, I think that they certainly came short, and they failed this season. In your mind, knowing the kind of competitor that you are and you were when you played, did the Yankees fail this season by not moving past the ALDS?
I think it's always. I mean, I think that's what you sign up for as a Yankee and as a Yankee fan. I mean, you know, the expectation is to win the World Series every year. So I think, you know, if you ask anybody to a man in that organization or on that team, they would say it was a failure just because we didn't get that parade at the end, and that's always the ultimate goal.
CeCe, I know it's a five-game series. You went to five games. Close game. You know, unfortunately, the Yankees come out as the losers. But, I mean, is it fair to point to game two as where this series shifted?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you still, like I said, you know, me and Ryan were talking on the podcast. And you know, for, as a player, you know, when, you know, you lose game two or whatever happens, you know, you don't care about any of that. You know, you know you still got games to play. So you're just trying to go out and win one game at a time. You know, we had that series in 2017 when we went down 2-0 in Cleveland, and you know everybody's freaking out about Joe not making a replay call, and you know that's just for people on the outside to talk about, for us, you know, the media, for us to talk about and go at. But as a player, you know, you're just trying to win one game at a time, and they still had, you know, it was still in their hands. So, you know, I don't think anybody's going to make an excuse and look back and say game two. They still, you know, had a chance to win in game five and just came up short to a really good Rays team that, you know, I was really nervous about playing in the first place. So that's a team, the Rays, that we play all the time. We play them tough every time. They play us tough, you know, no matter whether we're in Tampa or Yankee Stadium. So I knew it was going to be a really close series. And, you know, Brousseau put a really tough at-bat on Chappie and ends up getting a fastball that he can handle after, you know, fouling off some tough pitches, taking some sliders, and put a good swing on it. After his third, you know, that was his third AB in that series off Chappie. So he had seen him a couple times.
CC, the Yankees have embraced analytics, as have most teams around baseball, but do you think it's time for the organization to reconsider how they employ the analytics to their overall philosophy?
I mean, that's not for me to say. You know, I just work there. You know, I'm a it's not for me to say about what they should do with their analytics or anything like
that.
I guess my question
to you is this. Like, we see that analytics over 162 or a regular season works out, but when you get into a short series in the postseason – the game seems a little bit differently. Do you think they need to reconsider, or not even just reconsider, but just think about their approach when it comes to postseason baseball as opposed to regular season baseball?
I think everybody does. I think everybody needs to reconsider their approach. I think, you know, if you look at last year with the Nationals, you know, they had to have the three starters to be able to win. I think when you get to the postseason, you know, you have to have three starters no matter what. You know, you could try to do bullpen days throughout the season and, you know, have openers and all that stuff. And obviously we know that works out. But when you get into the postseason, you have to have three guys that can, you know, at any time in any series can give you six, seven innings. You know, like I said, the Nationals don't win the World Series last year without Anibal Sanchez stepping up and giving them big starts. So, you know, I think everybody needs to reconsider the way they, you know, look at the postseason. And the teams that always win are the teams with the best starters. But that's not necessarily true for the regular season.
CC Sabathia with us here, 98.7 ESPN. So you said Game 2 didn't cause the Yankees to lose the series. But did you have an issue with what they did in Game 2 by taking Garcia out after the one inning and putting Happ in from then on?
Well, I just thought if there's ever a time for you to start a 21-year-old in the playoffs, it would be when there's no fans in the stands. So, you know, I thought maybe we had an advantage there. You know, by getting a chance to let Davey get some playoff experience and pitching a big, you know, playoff series with no fans in the stands. I was just excited to see him go out and get that experience. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see how he pitches in the postseason, you know, the years coming up. But I thought that would be a great experience for him, you know, kicking off his playoff experience with the Yankees, you know, getting a chance to pitch in a stadium with no fans.
Especially because you won game one. I mean, that's a perfect opportunity. I mean, of all the games, you mentioned you're going to need starters. You play every single day. If you're going to start him in one of these games, game two after a win is the perfect time to do it. CeCe, everyone wants to blame the bats, right? Can't get big hits in big moments. It's a close game. Rays get the hit. But, I mean, can you also point to the fact that, I mean, once we got into the postseason, the amount of or the lack of depth in the bullpen came back to bite you a little bit too?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we always look at our team and our bullpen is always the strength of our team, and then we get into the postseason, it ends up not being the case. So I think, you know, maybe we need to, you know, reconsider how we align our bullpen and, you know, have some guys that we can really rely on, you know, at the end of the game in these postseason games.
See, what are your thoughts on Davey Garcia and how he pitched this year?
I thought he pitched great. You know, we know he's very mature. He can handle, you know, pitching in New York. He's got the stuff to do it. You know, so I'm excited to see him going forward, him and Clark Schmidt. You know, Monty pitched great in the postseason. You know, we get Severino back. You know, hopefully Massa, you know, ends up signing back. And then, you know, you got Cole at the top. So I think, you know, going forward, we're set up to you know, have those three starters that I talked about to go into a deep playoff run. We just came a little short this year.
CC Sabathia with us here, 98.7 ESPN on DCR. The Astros, what angers you more about them? The fact that they cheated, got caught, or the fact that even though that happened, they've been like defiant and almost like playing the victim card throughout this whole thing?
I think it's just the no humility about it. You know, obviously we know what happened in 2017. We know they got caught. We know. You know, they got disciplined for it, but they still pretend like, you know, we're making up something. So I think that's the most frustrating part as a fan and as a player that played against them in 17 is that we know that they're a good team. And I think that's what was most frustrating about, you know, about them actually cheating in 17 is that we know they're really good. So if they know what's coming and they're a good team, obviously you see what they're doing this year, we have no chance. So I think that was the biggest thing I think, you know, people were trying to – or I was trying to convey, and I think people were, you know, still upset about.
Yeah, and relax. You beat the Twins, too. Everyone beats the Twins. CeCe Sabathia joins us here on the show. CeCe, last one from me. How much do you think – Gary Sanchez, and we saw what he's capable of doing offensively. When he's right, he's the best offensive catcher in Major League Baseball. How much did them being so focused on changing him defensively, how much do you think that played into his struggles offensively this season?
You know what? I don't know. Obviously, I wasn't around as much this year because of COVID and, you know, not wanting to get the team sick. But, it was weird. I thought this year for sure he would come back and, you know, bounce back offensively. You know, for me, I threw to Gary a lot, and I had no problem with it. You know, he works hard, and I've said this a million times. If he was a guy that didn't work hard and didn't work at catching and didn't really care about catching, then I feel like it was valid points to get on him. But he works so hard, and he wants to be a great catcher, and he cares a lot. So, I mean, as a teammate, all you can do is just support him, and hopefully he goes out and turns it around. Obviously, offensively, we know he's one of the best hitters in the league. You know, it's just, you know, going to take for him to unlock and, you know, the right side of the field for me again to get him back to where he was in 2016 and 17.
CeCe, so for so much of the season, we thought that it was a foregone conclusion, you know, fans, people in the media, that the Dodgers would represent the National League in the World Series, but they dropped game one of the CS to the Braves. I mean, what do the Braves have to happen in order to get out of this series and actually beat the Dodgers on their way to the World Series?
They just got to keep pitching well. You know, their starting pitching has stepped up huge, and that's something that was a problem for them, having all those guys go down so early in the season. And these guys have really stepped up and pitched well. And if they can keep that up with this Dodger team, which seems unlikely to me just because the Dodgers have so much firepower and they're so deep, they'll be able to win that series. But just for me, the Dodgers are so deep and, you know, their pitching staff is so deep that I think it's going to be tough for them to come out of that series with a win.
Now, CeCe, you're a Raiders fan, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
I mean, you must be on cloud nine after that performance this weekend.
It was. I mean, we're just so up and down, you know what I mean? Like, I'm excited, but our schedule's so tough, and we play so up and down. But, you know, we haven't beat Kansas City since I was probably a senior in high school, which is 20 years ago. So it was exciting to watch them actually pull off a win in Kansas City.
Yeah, what was your reaction to the Dak Prescott injury?
Oh, man, that was horrible to watch, man. It was just, you know, it was obviously a nasty injury, but then just thinking about all the things he's been through the last 2 years, you know, trying to get paid, it just sucks, man. Everything being so public and, you know, him going back and forth in the contract negotiations, and this is always the last thing you think about, him, you know, having a serious injury like this. So, you know, to watch that on Sunday was tough, man, as an athlete and as a fan.
Who's going to win the World Series of these four?
You know, I think it may be the Rays and the Dodgers. And to be honest, out of those two teams, either one of them could win it. But, I'll go Dodgers.
Because you can't go Rays, right? I mean, that's your rival.
Me, personally, I can't go Rays. So yeah. I have to go Dodgers.
You have to go Dodgers. All right. CeCe, listen, we appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. I mean, let's chat every now and then, especially if you're Rays.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm retired now. I got nothing to do, so it's all good.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you, man. Enjoy the postseason. Enjoy the Raiders.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right. Good stuff. That, of course, CeCe Sabathia joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. I want to remind you can listen to us anywhere. Just click listen live at ESPNNewYork.com. Find 98.7 ESPN on the ESPN app or the TuneIn app, or simply tell your smart speaker, play 98.7 ESPN at 98.7 ESPN New York. We go where you go. You agree with that, Canty, right? You anybody but the American League? Braves or Dodgers you'll be rooting for in the World Series?
No, it's anybody but the Astros for me, Dave. Anybody but the Astros.
So you're actively rooting for the Rays right now.
As much as I dislike the Rays because they're a rival, like there is a lack of overall respect for the Astros. Like, I want all the bad things in baseball to happen to the Astros and nobody else.
So the worst thing for you would be Houston winning the World Series this year?
I think that's the worst thing for everybody that loves baseball, yes.
Well, fortunately for you, doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No. The Rays are up 2-0.
Yeah, Rays are better, I think.
It would be nice if the Rays could get the sweep, though. It'd be nice.
I think it's possible.
Just to completely sweep.
How about the catch that Margot made yesterday?
Oh my God.
Unbelievable.
Did you hear, though? I felt bad for Lauren Shahadi. Did you hear when she asked him?
No, I didn't see.
She said, you know, you've played a lot of right field here. And did that help out? And he's like, I never played right field here before.
Never played right field.
No, never have I played right field here before.
I used to make, dude, I'm telling you, that catch is like, if I were to pick a way, and usually it's robbing a home run, but to make a catch where and that you flip over the wall like that was always like, always my ultimate. Like, I always wanted to make a catch like that.
But you're completely exposed, dude. Like, he can't brace himself when he's falling over the fence.
No.
Dude, you know what I'm saying?
My dream was growing up in Boston. You know where the bullpen is?
Yeah.
Is me running full speed at Fenway. And then as the ball is going over the fence, I leap because it's a short fence. And I catch it as I'm diving over the fence. I used to make my dad throw baseballs to me, like the hedges in front of our house.
Up against the wall, everybody did.
No, it wasn't against the wall. It was the hedges. And then I would dive over the hedges and catch it.
For us, it was in front of the garage with the gutter hanging down.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, of course. That's every kid's dream, to catch it over the wall. It's the dream. Lakers win championship. I mean, just a terrific job by LeBron and the whole bubble. And all that was really, really well done. You mentioned earlier, Rick, you wanted to hear what LeBron had to say after the game. Here's a little snippet of LeBron after winning another title and another Finals MVP.
We just want our respect. Rob wants his respect. Coach Vogel wants his respect. Our organization wants their respect. Laker Nation wants their respect. And I want my damn respect, too.
Do you think there are those people that don't give the Lakers or LeBron or anybody respect? I think they all get respect, no?
Yeah, I don't know who he's speaking to. I mean, I know I respect the hell out of LeBron James. And the people that pretend like they don't respect LeBron James are only doing it because they're trying to create conversation.
A hot take. Yeah, you want to make a hot take. Yeah.
That's how they pay their bill. That's how they keep their jobs, is to make that a conversation.
Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous to disrespect LeBron James. He's one of the two greatest players to have ever played in the NBA. Who have ever played the game of basketball. Let's just call it what it is. Like, to be disrespectful to him about his legacy and you know, all his championships and all of that stuff, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, I get that there are some people that are fiercely loyal to Michael Jordan and everything that he did, but I don't think you have to tear down LeBron James to celebrate how great Michael Jordan is.
One of these guys, and I don't want to give him the time of day by mentioning the name, one of these, we'll call him for lack of a better term, shock jock sports radio guys, had a tweet this week, and I guess a conversation on his show. If LeBron wins a championship, does it detract from his legacy this year?
That's absolutely ridiculous. How does that take away from his legacy?
I mean, it's ridiculous.
How does winning a title, it's a pandemic.
Just listen to what you just read. It's so stupid that you're going to have to tune in to hear what he has to say because it's so ridiculous.
I did not. It is moronic. But I think everyone that is of any sound mind has the ultimate respect for LeBron and the Lakers.
The only person that people don't respect in LeBron's little speech is Rob Pelinka. Like, I'm a Lakers fan. I still don't have a lot of respect for Rob Pelinka, just how he did Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
Rob Pelinka still seems a little greasy to me.
Cable Rob Lowe. That's who he is.
Yeah.
You know what? He helped you in another championship. Congratulations.
I don't think that was Rob Lowe. I think that's LeBron and Clutch Sports.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.